Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's May 6, 2012 in Rotterdam, Belgium. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 12. This is Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead. Text 23. Sunanda Nanda Uttatu. Bobora Jan Subhadrante. Vacham Novahita Shrinu. Ya Pancha Varshas Tapasa. Bhavandevam Atitripat. Please chant. Maybe everyone could also move up a little bit. We'll fulfill one of the seven purposes of ISKCON to bring the members closer to each other. If you could please chant. Sunanda Nanda Uchatuhu. Sunanda and Nanda said, Bhobo Rajan. O dear king, Subhadram. Good fortune, te, unto you, vacham, words, naha, our, avahita, attentively, shrinu, hear, yaha, who, panchavarshaha, 5 years old, tapasa, by austerity, bhavan, you, devam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atitripat. Greatly satisfied. So I was asked to pick a verse that related to education. So this is Dhruva Maharaj about to get on to the airplane to go to Vaikuntha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. I realize that some of you, or maybe many, how many of you have English as a second, third, fourth, fifth language? Okay. If I talk too fast, I have a tendency to talk very fast. I'm from New York, and we do everything fast there. Drive, talk, everything, run. So if I talk too fast, just tell me, or if I say some word in English that you don't understand, please ask me. Is that a deal? That's a deal? Okay. Translation. Nanda and Sunanda, the two confidential associates of Lord Vishnu, said, Dear King, let there be all good fortune unto you. Please attentively hear what we shall say. When you were only 5 years old, you underwent severe austerities, and you thereby greatly satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. What was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for anyone. Any five-year-old child can be trained, and within a very short time, his life will become successful by realization of Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, this training is lacking all over the world. It is necessary for the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement to start educational institutions in different parts of the world to train children starting at the age of 5 years. Thus, such children will not become hippies or spoiled children of society. Rather, they can all become devotees of the Lord. The face of the world will then change automatically. Sunanda Nanda Uchatuhu Bobo Rajan Subhadram Te Vacham No Vahita Shrinu Ya Panchavarshas Tapasa Bhavam Devam Atitripat. Nanda and Sunanda, the two confidential associates of Lord Vishnu, said, Dear King, let there be all good fortune unto you. Please attentively hear what we shall say. When you were only 5 years old, you underwent severe austerities, and you thereby greatly satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says, the face of the world will then change automatically. Just this one thing. Well, what would that mean? Wherever you go, there's a prasadam restaurant. The milk you buy is from cows that aren't being slaughtered. There's hardly any crime. The rulers are ethical and caring. The land, the water, the food are all nourishing and pure and full of vitality. There's natural material prosperity. We're all under the shelter of the divine energy of Srimati Radharani instead of the trident-wielding Durga. It's a trident-wielding riding on a tiger. And a world where attaining spiritual perfection is interwoven into all aspects of life. We talked yesterday about careers for our children. What to speak of our children, even our adults. You go out into the career world and you have to remember you're a devotee but not act like one, and act like you're not a devotee but not become one. You have to do something called identity management, and you're exhausted at the end of the day. Right? And you're at work and it's somebody's birthday. Would you like some cake? I'm a vegetarian. Don't eat eggs. Oh yeah, I forgot. Why don't you eat eggs? And it becomes so difficult. One of the main questions we get asked, like among the top five questions everywhere in the world, how can I be Krishna conscious at school? How can I be Krishna conscious at work? But if the face of the world were changed automatically, then yakaroshi yadagnasi yattahosi didasi yattapasesi kanteya tatkarushva madarpanam. It would be so easy to offer Krishna everything you do, because everything you do would be naturally and obviously related with Krishna. Prabhupada writes in the purport to that verse, one should mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance, even though everyone has to work for the maintenance of body and soul. Wouldn't it be nice if all the ways we could work to maintain our body and soul were obviously connected with Krishna? How to achieve all this? Prabhupada says, create schools to train children all over the world. Now you might say, okay, Urmila, you know, right. As if the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement are really going to start educational institutions in different parts of the world to train children. We're going to wait for that for a long time. In the meantime, I'm going to be 90. Or maybe in my next body or something. What does this have to do with me? But there's a benefit to having schools, not only to change the world, but for me. So how many of you here are absolutely 100% sure that you're going to attain Krishna Prema and Goloka Vrindavan before you give up this body? Anybody here? You know, that question was asked to the GBC by our late godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, in Florida in the late 90s. That was when the abuse in schools first really affected the GBC. It was brought to their notice in 89-90, but it didn't really like hit them until many years, almost 10 years later. And Sridhar Maharaj asked, how many of you are sure? He said, then where do you think you're going to go? Where does Krishna say we're going to go? Where does Krishna say we're going to go if we don't achieve perfection in this life? Yeah, we'll become Vishrambar and Kapila and Janu and Gopi Gita, and how many other Gurukulis do we have here? We have our second, Janu's third generation. That's what we're going to be. We're going to be the children in the Hare Krishna movement. Do you want to be one of the children in the Hare Krishna movement? That's what you have to ask yourself. In so many places I go, there are children that come to the class and they make some little happy noise, not even crying noise, happy noise. Get that child out of here. I said, you know, that might be me 50 years from now. That might be you. So we need educational institutions for us. Please don't think, oh, that's just the business of the grihasthas. You know, when I ran a school, you're asking, who should pay for education? You ask the devotees in general, and they say the grihasthas. You ask the grihasthas in general, they say the grihasthas who have children. And you ask them, and they say the grihasthas who have children in the school. We think, you know, it's somebody else's business. Or it's the business of the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement, as Prabhupada says here. We're all leaders in the Krishna consciousness movement. One time the devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, they didn't do it. And Prabhupada said, what is this they? That means bureaucracy. You are all they. So it's one day looking in the mirror and saying, me too. So this is for us. Even Bharat Maharaj, son of Rishabhdev, an incarnation of God. His father was an incarnation of God, and it still took him 3 lifetimes. Would we like to have a birth, so many of us, like we had already in this life? Would we like a birth where we have to struggle just to be a vegetarian? Where our family's training us that, you know, the Supreme Lord is Superman and Batman, and the way to become happy is to play computer games and learning all these useless subjects again? So why is education so important? Why does it make such a difference for society and for the individual? Well, first of all, as far as the society, and you'll have to excuse me here, because I teach sociology in the college. So we'll look at a sociological principle from Rodney Stark. Rodney Stark and Roger Fink are two of the few researchers who study what allows religious organizations to succeed. Now, by succeed, they mean that they hang around for a while and they have a lot of members. That's what they mean by succeed. They hang around at least 100 years, which is a long time in the for a religious movement, by the way. Most religious movements do not last for 100 years. And they have at least 100,000 followers. Again, that's only a tiny fraction of religious movements that get that far. Of course, we would consider success, I hope. Sometimes I'm not sure that maybe we consider success like that too. Numbers and big and big and big. The first question anyone ever asked me about my school was, how many students do you have? There was a rare person that said, what are the qualities of the students in your school? That was unusual. Maybe question number 500. Maybe. So sometimes we also look at just numbers. Well, we're successful if we build a bigger temple and we have more people and more people. Anyway. So according to that criteria, Stark identifies several items that are common to all religious movements that succeed. And we're not going to look at all of them here. We're going to look at two that have to do with children. One is there's enough fertility. We really seem to have a problem with this in the Hare Krishna movement. We have adopted the outside society's mentality that we don't like children. And Srila Prabhupada writes in many purports about how in a natural society people like children. They like to have children around. They like to have children. Admittedly, children are noisy and dirty, and they can't control their senses. That's their dharma. They're supposed to be noisy and dirty. If they weren't noisy and dirty, they wouldn't be children. Right? So we have taken on the outside society's idea that marry as late as you possibly can and have as few children as you can get away with, so that you can enjoy sense gratification to the fullest. We were at an ecological conference in Hungary, put on by our farm, by our new Vrajdam, and one professor who's not a devotee, he started off the conference by talking about how people in the West, especially we terribly evil Americans over there on the other side of the pond, that we're hogging, and I was thinking, I wonder if there's any other Americans in the audience, that those Americans are hogging all of the world's resources. And he said, if we really all want to enjoy the Earth's resources, we have to make sure there aren't too many people so that all of us can get a lion's share. I mean, it was really, wow. you know, we really have to push contraception and abortion and late marriage so that all of us can enjoy a high standard of living. I thought, okay. All right, the second point that Starks make in relationship to children is not only you've got to have a lot of children, but you've got to, what he calls, socialize them properly to do two things, to minimize their defection so they don't leave. And also, and this is interesting, he said to minimize the appeal of reduced strictness. He talks about the phenomena that people born into a religion rather than converted to it tend to have less desire for strictness. And what I've noticed in working with hundreds and hundreds of kids born in the movement is that they don't go through a fanatic stage. They just don't. I mean, unless they weren't trained as devotees at all, and then they kind of come later as a teenager, like a new bhakta. I've seen that sometimes. You know, they're only officially born in the movement. But if they're actually trained as devotees, they don't have a fanatic stage. They don't have a everything I ever did in my life is Maya thing, which takes us, you know, adult converts, sometimes 15, 20, 25 years to get over. Oh, maybe there was something in my previous life I can use in Krishna consciousness. The kids naturally have Krishna consciousness integrated. And because of that, they appear not to be so interested. Actually, Krishna even says this in the sixth chapter, that they'll always stand above the ritualistic principles of the Vedas. So I don't know why we're so surprised that they're like that, because that's what Krishna says they're going to be like. They're going to be interested in the essence. They're not going to be interested in a bunch of rituals. And if we present Krishna consciousness to them as a religion with a bunch of rituals, they won't be terribly interested. So those are the two things. And researchers like Stark and Fink point out that there's never been in the history of the world a religious movement that succeeded if all the members were celibate. It's never happened. No religious society has ever prospered only by converts. Never. Now, I would like to ask all of you, in many parts of the world, not every part of the world, not Russia, but in many parts of the world, who are the main people that are joining the Hare Krishna movement? What's our movement becoming more and more made up of? The diaspora of Indians, the children of the Indians. So we're still getting most of our members from children who are born into the culture. If we think we're going to grow as a society mostly from taking people from one culture to another, we will die. All right, so that's one reason. Another reason is that children are molded according to their association. Right? Purusha prakrite stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunaha karanam guna sangasya sadasadyoni janmashu. We become like whatever we associate with. And Prabhupada says, children imitate whoever they associate with. He says, you all know the movie Tarzan? He was brought up by monkeys and he took on the habits of monkeys. If you keep children in good association, their psychological development will be very good. They will become like demigods, but if you keep them in bad association, they will turn out to be demons. Children are a blank slate. You can mold them as you like, and they are eager to learn. Shyamasundar. So a child's personality doesn't develop according to a fixed pattern? Srila Prabhupada, no. You can mold them in any way like soft dough. However you put them into the mold, they will come out, like bharats, chapatis, or kachuris. Therefore, if you give children good association, they will develop nicely, and if you put them in bad association, they will develop poorly. So everybody knows this. This is not some kind of a secret. Prabhupada here is not talking about one's personality. He's talking about what you do with your personality, whether you use your personality for good or evil. You know, we come into this world with a particular personality, but as Krishna says twice in the Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter and 18th chapter, he said, you have a nature. Your question is, are you going to do it for Krishna or are you going to do it for illusion? That's the question. So all of us have a nature. We have some inclination. Some of us are more outgoing. Some of us are more shy. Some of us are more cautious. Some of us are more risk-taking. Some of us are more pessimistic or optimistic. You know, some of us like working with people. Some of us like working with jobs. Some of us are more creative. Some of us are very systematic. So that's not going to change by association. But what will change is, what do I do with that? Will I use it to elevate myself? Will I use it to degrade myself? And that's mostly due to association. So having good educational institutions provides children with good association. And children, even the modern scientists talk about the fact that children are very malleable. They talk about how the brain waves of young children are similar to those in hypnosis. So very, very young children, it's like they're in deep hypnosis. And you see little children, they have kind of this glazed look in their eyes, actually. And they just repeat whatever's around them. You can always tell how the parents speak by how the little children speak. You know, if you swear in your house, everybody will know if you have a child. So they just automatically pick up whatever you do. And gradually, the consciousness changes. So that by the time a person is somewhere between 16 and 20, their brains are mostly beta waves and they're not so influenceable. And a school for devotees, a school in Krishna consciousness creates devotees. So in this verse, we have here, now I'm just repeating this from another Sanskrit scholar because I'm not anything like a Sanskrit scholar. But Atitripat, so this is considered the loon of a nick, if any of you understand that. The errorist of a causative verb. And what it means is that Dhruva Maharaj caused the Lord to be happy. So that's what devotees do. Devotees make Krishna smile. Prabhupada said the devotees in Vrindavan, all they want to do is make Krishna smile. We all understand that psychology, that what makes me the happiest is to be a catalyst for someone else's happiness. There's nothing that makes any of us happier than that. And the supreme person who we want to make happy is Krishna. So proper educational systems allow everyone to make Krishna smile. And another just technical point, that here, Nanda and Sunanda, although they're two, the Sanskrit here is plural, naha, instead of dual. And Giridhari Lala, who's a follower of Vallabhacharya, said the plural is used because when you're devotees, you're so great that it's like there's many of you, even if there's two. So this is the greatness of the devotees. And nice schools produce devotees. Devotees are the most glorious. What do we mean by a devotee? Man mana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskaru mam evasthasi yuktvaiva matmana mad parayana, which Prabhupada said should be the essence of our educational training. Which means it should also be the essence of our Hare Krishna movement. Always thinking about Krishna, becoming Krishna's devotee. Right? I mean, what do you do if you're doing that? Satatam kirtayantomam yatantas chadradavrata. Namasyantastamam bhaktya nitya yukti upastate. One's always, just like we talk about who we love, who we're attached to, what we love, what we're attached to. And one will always be talking about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, absorbed in offering obeisances with gratitude to Krishna. So I wanted to look now at, well, schools. What does that mean? When we say Hare Krishna schools, Krishna consciousness schools, I'm sure each of us has a little picture in her mind. Somebody sees, straw huts and wooden shoes. And somebody sees a big modern building with hundreds and hundreds of children and smart boards and everybody chanting Hare Krishna. Everybody chanting Bhagavad Gita. Some of us see kids living at the school. Some of us see kids going there as day scholars. Some of us think there's only boys. Some of us think there's boys and girls. Some of us think they only go to a certain age. Some of us think they're only trained to do fire yagas. Some of us think they're trained to be computer programmers. You know, we all have a different idea. So we talked about this a little bit at the conference yesterday, how we've seen in our Krishna consciousness movement that one of the reasons we don't have a lot of schools, there's a number of reasons, but one of the reasons we don't have a lot of schools is we seem to have a real problem agreeing what's a Krishna conscious school. And so when you try to start a Krishna conscious school, the very people who should be helping you and encouraging you generally give you a hard time. You try to start a Krishna conscious school, and your local temple authorities, your local devotee community, they'll say, it's not Krishna conscious enough. It's too Krishna conscious. You have too much emphasis on academics, not enough on I had, this is a true story. Okay, I'm really not, I wish I was making this up. I really do. It was in one day when I was in one day after school. So this mother came to see me and she said, Ormila, you know, really, I want my daughter to grow up to be a devotee. I'm not so interested in academics. Could you excuse her from all of her homework? She was like 15, you know. I said, I really don't think I can say, okay, everyone has this assignment except her. I just don't think that's going to work. She said, well, you know, I've sent her to this gurukul so she has time to do seva. Right? So she left unhappy. And an hour later, again, I really wish this was a fantasy, but an hour later, another parent came and said, you know, I'm really upset that my daughter doesn't have enough homework. You know, devotional service, that's nice. I'm happy she's a devotee, but she's got to get into Duke. She's going to bed at 9 o'clock at night. She obviously doesn't have enough work to do. That's what he said. And you're just kind of like, and then people come and say, you know, you really have to please the parents. I'm like, which one? So what I would like to do is look at principles of education. Because my conclusion is that our philosophy, being that we're all individual, means that we're going to exemplify the principles of Krishna consciousness, each of us a little differently. I know that sounds really radical. And when you're a new devotee, you think the measure of someone's Krishna consciousness is how much they can form. But really, as we develop in Krishna consciousness, we should start developing our actual personality. But even materially, we each have a different personality. I mean, to the extent that each of our bodies is different. I mean, I don't know why Krishna did that. Who cares? I'm only in this body for 8 billionths of a second of Lord Brahma. You know, but I've got a different thumbprint and different DNA. And what to speak of me? You know, I give the example all the time. Krishna doesn't even make two snowflakes alike. And they're just matter. So different schools will also be different. And who's running a school like Sandipani Muni ran anyway? What did Sandy Money? So some people say, we have the traditional school. So what did Sandipani Muni teach? Do you remember what he taught? What did he teach? Which were they? Can you list some of them? Yeah, ringing water bottles. What's your curriculum in your school? We teach ringing water bottles. What else did he teach? Not just guessing, but actually being able to know. So clairvoyance. To speak the languages of the animals. What foreign languages do you study in your school? Dog language, cow language. What else did he teach? Reading omens. What else? Hairdressing. Hair dyeing and hairdressing, yeah? Oh, breeding flowers. Yes, breeding flowers, breeding animals. What else did he teach? Dancing underwater and playing musical instruments underwater. Preparing different drinks, even intoxicating ones. Whoa, what do you teach in your school? And making flower airplanes. So the next time someone tells you, we have a traditional school, we are the Vedic school, say, do you have flower airplanes and making intoxicating beverages as part of your curriculum? And then we have Mahaprabhu's school. You know, Mahaprabhu went to the school of Gangadas Pandit. It was a day school. And Mahaprabhu ran a day school. When he was 14 years old, he became a teacher, which is another interesting topic. And he ran a day school. Now, did Mahaprabhu teach making flower airplanes and playing music underwater? No. What did he teach? Grammar, logic, rhetoric. That means public speaking. So when we started a school, I didn't follow Sandipani Muni's model. I followed Mahaprabhu's model. I said, all my kids are going to learn public speaking and logic, right? So two very different models, both of them having to do with no less than God. So how can you say there's one model? That's absurd. What about for the different varnas? Well, the Pandavas didn't learn exactly the same thing as Brahmanas. All right, so I'm going to look at 13 principles. Now, I got these from, with exception of the 13th, I got the first 12 principles from lectures Srila Prabhupada gave in 1976 in Mumbai. And I find these lectures particularly relevant, even those of you who don't care one iota about training children and are thinking, what am I doing in this class? So Srila Prabhupada there in 76 was establishing a brahmachari ashram in the Mumbai temple, as well as wanting to start a school. And he was going back and forth in his classes between talking about the training for the adults and the training for the children. So it applies to both. Okay, first thing he said, and this is not in order. I pulled them out from the various classes. So they're not in order of importance. They're not in any particular order. But the first principle we'll look at is there has to be love between the guru and the disciple. Prabhupada said, therefore, brahmachari means living under the direction of guru, gurur hitam. And gurur hitam, how can he be simply thinking of benefiting the spiritual master? Unless that position comes, nobody can serve guru. It is not an artificial thing. The brahmachari, the disciple, must have genuine love for guru. Then he can be under his control. Otherwise, why should one be under the control of another person? So a principle of if you're going to say this is a real Krishna conscious school, there has to be a relationship of love between the teacher and the student. There has to be a relationship of love between the teacher and the student. And this may also mean, probably also means, setting up the physical system for that kind of relationship to develop. In modern schools, you've got 30, 35 kids in a class, and the teacher gets new students every year. There's never a time to really develop much of a relationship with those students. Next principle that we're going to look at is sense control, especially controlling sex life and association between men and women. So any proper traditional educational institution has to be teaching control of the senses. Has to be teaching that in order to be a human being, you have to use your senses in the service of the Lord. Now, unfortunately, we don't have time today. If you're particularly interested in this topic of how to deal with sex desire, we have an ISKCON Desire Tree under Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila 8, 138, a lecture you can download and listen to. And I'm going to be, Krishna willing, giving that again in New Vrindavan in a few days, next Saturday. And we'll post that again. So the way that, just briefly, we'll say the way to control sex desire is not repression, suppression, denial, and killing. You cannot kill sex desire. Anybody know why you can't kill sex desire? Yes, thank you. It's the nature of the soul. Prabhupada says in 525.5 that sexual feelings exist in spiritual bodies. And in Majja 8.138, he talks about how sexual desires are there in Krishna and in the living entities. So control of sex desire does not mean killing it. Killing it will bring you, as far as I can understand, to one of three positions. Either you'll become very angry. Anger is the younger brother of lust. If you try to kill lust, you'll simply become angry. And we see many devotees who walk around all the time being angry. Or else you become hard-hearted. Just doing austerities without bhakti, you become hard-hearted. We also see people who have this problem. Or you'll fall. Eventually you'll fall. And your fall will be probably very embarrassing. Probably won't be something you want to do. So what we want to do, the way we control sex desire, is we turn lust back into love. And the essence of the way the jiva experiences original sexual desire is by uniting Krishna with his energy of pleasure, his Ladini Shakti. Anytime you please Krishna, we're talking about how the devotees make Krishna smile. Anytime you please Krishna, Krishna's energy of pleasure must be involved. So when you please Krishna, Krishna is united with his pleasure energy, and the jiva also feels satisfied. What's the main way we unite the Lord with his pleasure energy? Hare Krishna. Interesting, isn't it? Yes. That's what we're doing. We're uniting the Lord with his pleasure energy, which is why one who deeply experiences the chanting of Hare Krishna has no interest in the perversion of that in the material world. Then the next principle we're going to look at is, for it to be a genuine school, there must be worship of the Lord and worship of the Guru. So this is gratitude and respect. You know, Kapilapur was saying to me yesterday how it seems in the whole material world there's a lack of gratitude. And I was thinking, that's really the beginning of dharma. The difference between vikarma and karma is gratitude. Vikarma, you steal. That's what sinful activity means. You're stealing. Let me take some enjoyment without paying for it. The beginning of dharma is you do sacrifice. You say, I take something, I have to pay for it. So actually, some respect to the Lord. Some respect to the Guru. Like Krishna says, sacrifice without remuneration to the priest is in the mode of ignorance. And when Kamsa's ministers want to destroy dharma in the world, they say, destroy any sacrifice where there's remuneration to the priest. So, you know, we even have that also, this idea in ISKCON, that because brahmanas shouldn't get a salary, they shouldn't be supported. Now, what the brahmana is supposed to live on. Supposed to go out in the forest in Belgium and dig up the roots or something like that. So then no nonsense talk. Next principle we're looking at is no nonsense talk. And particularly Prabhupada talks about politics, not talking about politics. Gramyakata. Do you know this person did this? You know, my dear friends, ISKCON exists on several levels. And we had an article on ISKCON.com in Dandavats, if you want to take a look at it. What is ISKCON and who is a member of ISKCON? So ISKCON exists on the level of Mahaprabhu's Leela. There are devotees in this movement who are experiencing being in this movement as being part of Mahaprabhu's Leela, internally and externally in terms of the preaching mission. This movement also exists on the platform of Sattvagun. It's a place to become purified, to become liberated. It exists on the platform of Rajagun. It's a place for Dharma and Varnashram. And you know what? It also exists on the platform of Tamagun. It's a place for politics and money and status, etc. That also exists here. Just like if we look at our human body, you can say the human body is a vehicle to go back to home, back to Godhead. You can also say the human body is a bag of skin holding a bunch of stool and urine and pus. Now, how do you want to deal with your body? Do you want to every day wake up and say, oh, here's a bag of mucus and stool? What a way to live. Or do you want to say, here's a machine I can use in Krishna's service? So ISKCON's the same way. It says no different. It's a big body. So what do you want to focus on in ISKCON? Do you want to focus on, oh, it's Mahaprabhu's Leela and a vehicle for our own purification or even for Dharma? Or do you want to focus on the other stuff? So a real educational institution, no nonsense talk. No politics. Then, next principle, principle 6 I'm looking at here. Again, Prabhupada didn't name them. I'm giving them those numbers. To study the Vedas, especially the Bhagavatam. We visited a traditional Gurukul in South India, which also used modern technology. Fascinating place. And they said, they took both boys and girls. They said, the boys study the Vedas and the girls study the Puranas. So I wrote that to Jai Doitamarj, and he wrote back, lucky girls. So of all the Vedas, the cream is the Bhagavatam. So especially we should be studying Bhagavatam. If we're not studying Bhagavatam, we're not studying the Vedas, we can't say it's traditional education. Then next principle Prabhupada talked about, one should learn to offer obeisances. One should learn some humility. Next principle, simplicity. Simplicity of dress, simplicity of food, simplicity of furniture, simplicity of life. Not trying to make a gorgeous arrangement for sense gratification. Next principle he mentioned was begging and giving to the guru. Now this is a little hard to institute externally in modern society. But this idea that I'm giving back to my teacher. Again, this idea of gratitude. Then a really interesting principle. Please remember this also applies to the adult brahmachari ashram. Another really interesting principle is eating only when called. Eating only when called. And Prabhupada said that if it's time for prasadam, the guru is supposed to call each student by name. Gauripu, it's time for prasadam. Shamananda, it's time for prasadam. No, it's okay. Almost. And if somehow the guru forgets to say your name, you have to fast. It's interesting because even Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi. He was begging. Madhavendra Puri didn't beg. Madhavendra Puri took this principle that I will only eat if food just comes to me. I will not even beg. So this kind of, I'm going to be dependent. So I know devotees who've taken vows like this for at least periods of time. I'm only going to eat when I'm called. I know one devotee who says, I will never ask for money, ever. I will only take money if somebody voluntarily gives it to me. But this idea of dependence. And the main principle is to chant Hare Krishna. So if there's no chanting of Hare Krishna in the school, then you can't claim that it's actually at least not a Gaudiya Vaishnava school or under Srila Prabhupada. One should be chanting Hare Krishna. So there should be chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. And then expert. So I'm going to read what Prabhupada says in this. This is again, this is all from these 76 classes. Not that because he has become Krishna conscious and Vaishnava, he is unable to do anything of this material world. No. One who is Krishna conscious, he is conscious of everything and he knows how to deal with them. That is called daksha. Not that, quote, because I have become Krishna conscious, I have no knowledge in other things, unquote. We were talking in the conference about people getting selected quotes from Srila Prabhupada, taken out of context to push their own particular idea of what is traditional education. We never heard anybody quote this. But there it is. No! Every, you must have, if not complete, to know something of everything. That is intelligence. To know something of everything and to know everything of something. That is wanted. You may be expert, a devotee, you know everything of devotional service, but you should not be callous. You know something of everything. That is called daksha. So that's for the training for our children and for the training of our adults. Prabhupada said, not that, oh, I know everything about Krishna. I don't need to know anything else. No, something of everything and everything of something, which leads to the last principle, which does not come from these lectures, but it comes from Srimad Bhagavatam 276 purport. Practical training for a livelihood. Prabhupada says, the brahmachari or a boy from the age of 5 years, especially from the higher castes, namely from the scholarly parents, the brahmanas, the administrative parents, the kshatriyas, or the mercantile or productive parents, the vaishyas, is trained until 25 years of age under the care of a bona fide guru or teacher. And under strict observance of discipline, he comes to understand the values of life, along with taking specific training for a livelihood. So that would mean that in our temple ashrams, as well as in our schools, we should be giving people specific training for a livelihood. Something of everything and everything of something. How nice our movement would look if we did that. And as far as different kinds of schools, one other quote from these lectures, Prabhupada says, so a description of brahmachari is going on here, the dress. Prabhupada is referring to this quote in the Bhagavatam. The dress should be as simple as possible. So ajina means the deerskin. This is very essential because formerly the brahmacharis used to go to guru griha. In those days, the guru griha was not palatial building. But now if you haven't got palatial building, nobody will come. Actually, brahmachari, the guru also, they were living in the forest. So Prabhupada's saying, formerly they lived in the forest, but now if you don't have a nice building, nobody will come. So you have to make adjustment. You can't say, at least according to this quote, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but if you're going to follow this quote, you can't say the only bona fide Gurukula is in a forest. As Prabhupada says here, today you have to have a palatial building. All right, what can we do? Now, I hope none of you are feeling discouraged and just saying, okay, great, fine. You know, Jeremy, do you know what it's like to start a school? Yes, I do. And it's a really big thing. And it takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for a long, long time. And, you know, you might be saying, well, I'm not going to start a school. Well, I'm not going to run a school. What do I have to do with this? So one thing you can do is you can encourage children, encourage people to have children. Encourage people to get married. If they're living together for 4 years, say, I think you should get married now. And how old are you? 35. You should have children now. Don't wait any longer. So obviously, some people should be encouraged to be renunciates. One man's food is another man's poison. But the vast majority of people should be encouraged to get married young. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, maximum should be 24 for men and 16 for women. Encourage people to marry young and have children when they're young. And actually have children. Not to try to be a half grihastha, half sannyasi, you know. Well, we're real grihasthas. We just go to India every year for 6 months and, you know, we just sell stickers on the street to make a livelihood. Prabhupada says householder means house, wife, children. Don't try to make it something else. So encourage people to be real householders and have children. And don't say to someone, you already have 4 children? You know, I know one leader who he told one of his disciples who was expecting her second child, you know, 2 children, if you just chant your 16 rounds, I'll be happy. She was thinking, is it that hard? I was like, no. I said, there's a lot of women out there who have 4 or 5 kids and they have a full-time job. And they watch 2 hours of television every day and they have a dog, and you know. Like, and then welcome the children. They're just souls, you know. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hasandi Suni Javasupake Ja Pandita Samadarshina. I say a lot, if we can be nice to the cows, we can be nice to the devotees. Sometimes we treat the cows better than our wife or our children, or, you know. Be nice to the children. Yes, they are dirty. Yes, they are noisy. Yes, they can't control their senses. Yes, they are troublesome. That's what they do. Even the 4 Kumaras, they just walked right past all the gatekeepers till the last one. And Prabhupada says that in the purport. He says it's the nature of children. They don't see any barriers, you know. They'll just start climbing on the altar or whatever, you know. Oh, yeah, you know, it's okay. Kindly. Just smile at the children. That would be nice. Just smile at them. You don't have to pick them up or play with them, but at least smile at them. And remember, it might be you. And you want somebody to smile at you. Yeah? Like, Hare Krishna. Even if they're crying, Hare Krishna. And if you're speaking, don't just say, get that child out of here. Yeah, it's painful to, when you're the parent, too. It's really painful. You know, what plane were we on? Oh, it was the train. When we were on the train, there was some kids screaming, right? Remember? There was some kids screaming, and remember the lady behind us was saying, I really wish I could strangle that kid. I thought, man, why don't you just have some sympathy for the poor parents who are probably just tearing their hair out trying to get their kid to be quiet? Then encourage collaboration, just like this meeting. Encourage collaboration between schools. We teach Bhakti Shastri here at Bhaktivedanta College. We teach Bhakti Shastri in the VIHE. Maybe we could talk to each other during the conference. What do we do to teach Bhakti Shastri? Talk to each other. Encourage each other. You know, otherwise, everybody who's in education, they think, oh, I only have these problems. If only I did this or this or this, I wouldn't have these problems. And they talk to other people in education, they say, yeah, I find that everybody has those problems. It's just part of the job. And then you kind of, And get ideas from each other. Believe it or not, other people might have good ideas you didn't think of. And believe it or not, maybe some of the things you're doing are so wonderful that other people might want them. What a novel idea in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, maybe we've produced something in our school that someone else would actually like. You say, oh, it's not finished, it's not polished, but they might like it anyway. Maybe they've done something you would like. So encourage that. If you're in a community with different educational programs, encourage them to talk to each other. When you visit different places, tell them about the educational things that you went, that you know about what's going on. Oh, I met so-and-so from this school. You might want to talk to them about this. And support the educational institutions. That doesn't just mean money, though money is, I'm sure, always welcome. Maybe it means volunteering. Maybe it just means saying something nice. How radical. Something. It's a pretty building. I mean, something. Find something nice to say. Oh, I met the head of that school, and, you know, she's a friendly person. Or many people tell me they enjoy going. You don't just have to find something to criticize. And help to find solutions in areas of the world where it's difficult. There are some places in the world where it's really, really, really hard to have a school because of government restrictions or lack of money. And think about this. Become part of some kind of educational initiative, some way or another. I was recently in Innisfruith, and the town president was asking me, should I encourage homeschooling or schools? I said, well, if you encourage homeschooling, it'll be much easier for you. It'll be really simple. But if you build a school, you'll build a community. So Prabhupada wrote in a letter to Dayananda in 1973, Gurukul is our most important project. If the children are given a Krishna conscious education from early childhood, then there is great hope for the future of the world. So as Prabhupada is saying in today's purport, the face of the world will then change automatically. So if we really want to change the world, if we really want to change the prospects for ourselves, if we want to grow a Krishna conscious society, if we want to even be around 100 years from now, then we have to have education. And the principles we looked at are love between guru and disciple, and sense control, especially sex life and association between the opposite sex, worshiping the Lord and the guru. No nonsense talk. Oh, I skipped one. Studying the Vedas, especially the Bhagavatam, offering obeisances, simplicity, begging and giving to the guru, eating when called, chanting Hare Krishna, being expert, practical training for a livelihood, and I missed one, and I wonder if I should go back and say it. Should I? Rising early and attending Mangal Arati. Okay, I've already gone a little over time. I don't want to be in trouble. Who are the organizers? Do I have to stop now or any time for questions? Got two GBCs here, and, you know. What do you say? It's up to me? Of course. We start at 10, so we could have 5-6 minutes. No, I didn't explain that clearly. I'm saying that we may think we're not relying on children. We might think we're relying on converts. We might think, oh, this sociological principle doesn't apply to ISKCON because we can rely fully on converts. But actually, a large portion of our converts are the children of Indian families. So this principle that having children who are raised in the culture being essential to our membership is still operating, whether we realize it or not. That was my point. Thank you for clarifying that. I'm sorry if I didn't make it clear. Anybody else?
Doesn't seem to really appeal very much to God.
reminds me of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati saying that there's no mechanical arrangement that can bring people in the story of Putana to a higher level. And I wish I could get the words exactly right, that never in the history of religion has any mechanical arrangement ever been useful for such a purpose. So this is what we look at in philosophy of education as far as discipline. So that we have a very unusual idea of discipline and training. So you've got some New Agey Eastern people whose their idea is that we're all intrinsically good. We're all little parts of God. This is what they were saying to us, like at St. James in London. You know, we're all parts of God. We're all spiritual. We're all intrinsically good. And all you have to do is bring that out. Then you have the Christians, whose view is we're all intrinsically bad. Which is a very strange view of God, by the way. That he would create a living being who had a naturally evil nature. It would be like car manufacturers making cars that all swerve to the left unless you really held the wheel tightly, you know? Uh-oh. So the Christians think, you know, that we're all intrinsically bad. And therefore, the Christian idea of training was, you know, a lot of repression and suppression of a sinful nature. And the New Agers' idea is just put them in the proper environment and the good will automatically blossom. So I've been to, I used to visit a lot, when the first 5 years that I, after I started school, I visited an outside school at least once a week. And I remember going to one of these, you know, an extreme of one of these kind of free schools where the kids were literally throwing books at the teachers. And they're like, we're just letting the good nature come out, you know. We don't want to train them in any way. So we see both. We see both that we're a dirty diamond. We're all dirty diamonds. We're all diamonds. We can have up to 78% of the qualities of God. We're beautiful. We're youthful. As Ras Mandalpoo said, you know, we're joyful. We are expert. We're poetic. We're wonderful, but we're really dirty. So just like one time when I was visiting my son, so Janu's little brother, Devesha, he had a bad cold. And at that time he was about 2. And when little children have a bad cold, that their nose is running and they just do this. And then they do this, you know. So he comes all covered with mucus. So you don't say, oh, I don't love you anymore, but you give him a bath. So our training is two things. Our training is, yes, we have to give the children a bath. We have to teach them regulation, but at the same time, we have to blossom the seed of devotion that's already there in their heart. And you can't do just one or the other. You have to do both. Just repression, suppression doesn't work anyway. And just blossoming without some restriction in the beginning, that's not going to work either. Just like you pass, on the way here, we pass by little trees, and they have a protective covering around them when they're small. So you have to do both. So I'm being told now that if I don't stop, I'm going to be taken off with a crook and never invited back. So I would like to call each of you by name for prasadam, but would each and every one of you kindly now go take prasadam? Hare Krishna.
One more announcement related to prasadam, because it's a little cold and wet. So prasadam will be distributed in the hallway, and the Matajis can take prasadam in the temple room, and the man in the blue room, and also in the Bhakti Shastri room.